Dirt Bag has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from One Green World, a nursery located near Molalla, Oregon, offering hard-to-find plants designed to help you grow your own fruit and decorate your yard, deck, or patio. For a color catalog, the number is 503-651-3005, and the email address is catalog@onegreenworld.com. catalog@onegreenworld.com.
Well, we've reached the second Monday of the month at 10:30. Good morning. Time for the Dirt Bag. It's Glenn Andreessen here beside you now until 11 o'clock. This morning, welcoming back to studio number two, Ted Swenson of the Home Orchard Society and Man About Town. Welcome, Ted.
Thank you, Glenn.
He's been here several times. A wonderful fountain of knowledge and just an all-around good guy, so... We hope that you have fruit tree questions for the two of us. If we can't answer it, it may not be able to be answered. Yeah, we're saying that
right,
with a little bit of... But Ted has about two lifetimes worth of knowledge, so, or two of my lifetimes anyway. So, the Home Orchard Society, which is a grassroots organization that was started right here in Oregon and is still centered in Oregon, but there are members, I presume, all around the world?
Essentially, yes. We're in about half a dozen countries and 30-some-odd states.
Yeah. And there's just a... it's totally grassroots, just stipends paid and the... et cetera, et cetera. So if you don't even have to be old and retired to be in the group.
No, you don't.
When I joined, I was a relatively youngster. But that was about... 25 years ago, so
about when I did, yes.
Okay. The Home Orchard Society has many different events that are offered to the public for nominal fees, but offer training classes too for nominal fees. And we'll talk about a few of those here. One happened yesterday. This was a winter pruning, so we won't spend a lot of time on this, but it gives you an idea of some of the events. What was that, Ted, the pruning?
Home Orchard Society has almost a two-acre arboretum at Clackamas Community College. And so we conduct classes out there, you know, with the trees and other plants. So we have a variety of not just apples, peaches, pears, plums, but we have pluots and some of the more exotic things, quite a few different types of figs and 20-some different kinds of blueberries and 30-some different kinds of grapes and so on.
So not just trees.
Not just trees.
Sure.
So but our overall goal is education, to teach people how to grow and take care of fruit, trees, and vines in their backyard or side yard, or in my case, backside front yard.
Yes, that's one of the hallmarks of a Home Arch Society member is, where am I going to put this tree? I'm going to get it anyway. I'll have to figure out where to put it next.
Yes. Yeah, my city lot's 65 by 75, and I have a little over 35 trees, plus various vines and other things growing around, and a house.
So one of the things that you can learn about is the appropriate types of rootstock to be using, because that imparts the size of the tree, or most times the size of the tree. So.
Yes, that's one of the things that really gripes me anyway about the rootstock industry is that they will put a label on a tree that they're selling over the nurseries, and it's called dwarf or dwarfing. And most of us, we have our concept of dwarf, which is not the same as the rootstock industry's concept of dwarf. And so we have an extensive publication that describes these. And we will have on March 4th at the Clackamas County Fairgrounds, the main pavilion, starting at 10 o'clock, our annual event, which is essentially a rootstock sale. And we will have, with each rootstock, you can see you will get a one-page handout of everything that we can find out about that rootstock, like how many suckers is it going to form at the bottom. I was just walking in here, and I noticed a nice young tree been planted. It looked like 35 little suckers coming off the rootstock. Well, that's something you may want to avoid if you can. So we will have that information there, and it's part of our educational system.
And at the rootstock sale, there's also the sign exchange.
Yes, we will. One of the things we do, in fact, we have a grafting class coming up on February 25th at Clackamas Community College, and you can call there and register. And there's another grafting class at People's Food Co-op, which I just heard a little ad for.
Okay.
We will be there on March 18th, so February 25th at Clackamas Community College and March 18th at Food Co-op. We will also teach you how to graft at the Scion Exchange. And Scion is, I notice there's a car out called Scion.
Yeah.
It's a little sprout, right? But anyway.
That's a good way to remember it, isn't it?
Anyway, the Scion is what you graft onto the rootstock. So we will have, we don't know in advance because people bring Scion in, but I'm sure we will have several hundred varieties of, say, 200 to 300 varieties of apples and maybe 100 different varieties of pears, plus assorted peaches, plums, and so on, that you can graft on to particular rootstock that will give you the tree of your size that you want.
Yeah, and you buy the rootstock, and you can even pay somebody a little bit there to
Yes, you can buy rootstock, you can pay somebody to graft it for you while you watch, or you can sit down next to them with a knife and watch them graft trees, and they'll talk you through, and you can graft your own tree.
It's rather satisfying to do it, and then, of course, more satisfying if it even works. And in my case, as a beginner even, I had, 80 to 90% success rate, so easily done.
Yeah, it's not that difficult. And one nice thing about it is that you can grow fruit and trees that you cannot buy on the market. So that, you know, whatever nursery you're looking at, we will have many, many varieties and kinds of fruit that they won't touch because essentially there's no market for it.
Right. They have to sell it if they make it and if nobody wants it.
And just because it's not there doesn't mean it isn't any good.
Well, that reminds me to mention, at least in October, the All About Fruit Show, which is a great tandem event to go with the Scion Exchange, although you should start with the October show because that is when you can taste hundreds of varieties of fruit and then write it down because you never remember. And then in this March event, the Scion Exchange, you can look for that scion and grow your own tree of the type that you liked so much last October.
We will have people there to help explain some of the varieties that you may select or never heard of. I always suggest, you know, start with disease resistant.
Good point.
Because nobody likes to spray, and spraying is a timing event. With the weather dictates when you're going to spray, and most of us, if we have jobs or a busy lifestyle, we're not ready to spray when spraying should be done. And so you end up with diseased fruit and wormy fruit. And there are various techniques that we use to dispel those insects without spray.
Yes, and I want to talk about one of those right now. But if If you have fruit tree questions or just fruit growing questions, please give us a ring, 503-231-8187, and we'll let Ted take the first crack at any of your questions there. So you stumbled upon, all right, you weren't stumbling, you were waiting. While you were waiting.
While I was waiting, I stumbled on.
Yes. a rather unique method.
My fiance girlfriend was trying on shoes. And most women know when you go into a shoe store of any kind, they have these little nylon footy type things that are disposable. You slip on your foot and you try on your shoe and then you take those off and they're dumped. And I happened to think, well, I wonder if I slid those on an apple instead of a foot, would it keep the insects away? And I'm talking about apple maggots and coddling moth. And would it disintegrate because of air pollution? Would it slide off because of the weather? And the answers to all of those is no, it will not disintegrate. No, it didn't slide off. And yes, it kept all of the insects away from the fruit. And I only did 25 because I had to pick up a pocket of footies, a handful of footies out of the store.
But you got permission, did you not?
Yes, I did. Yes. I asked. They looked at me strange, and I think they gave them to me, glad to get me out of the store.
Yeah.
But it worked.
And this is kind of an improvement on the paper bag method of that we've talked about for several years of when the apple is very small, nickel size, we might say, to slip a small sandwich-sized Kraft paper bag over it, staple it on, and that will protect it.
That works, and it's very time-consuming.
Right.
And if the fruit doesn't have a long stem, it doesn't work. But with the nylon footies, it just works.
All right, see if you can top that, caller. We've got a couple of calls. We'll let Ted take a crack at him. Good morning. You're with the Dirtbag. Okay,
really?
It's true. Yeah. This time you're really on. Good morning.
Okay, good morning. I have a question about fruit trees, apple trees particularly, in growing in Northern California in Arcata, California. I was just there visiting my friend. They have now become covered with lichens to the point where they're just these incredibly beautiful gray trees. And she doesn't know what to do about the, you know, whether she should get up there and remove all the lichens or what that's a sign of. Also, the fruit has gotten very small over the last couple years.
Okay, good question. Lichens is it's a combination of a fungus and an algae growing. And the reason he has so much of them is because he has nice, clean air. If you live in the city, the pollution kills them. The county extension agents will tell you that lichens are bad because insects will hide in there and attack your fruit. I look at it another way, in that the lichens are good because not only will there be maybe some bad guys in there hiding mm-hmm. around, but there are also more good guys to help keep control of the bad guys. So I would look at lichens as a blessing. I would not look at them as a detriment.
All right.
But that doesn't explain the small apple size, though.
The small apple size, yeah, could...
Well, they haven't suckered them in a long time, so there's a lot of suckers. Doesn't that contribute to smaller fruit if you don't keep them pruned?
Yes. The suckers that grow will take the energy away from where, instead of it going to the fruit. Another thing is, does he thin his fruit? If you do not thin the fruit, then you have a heavy fruit set, then the average size is smaller. We usually recommend that you thin the fruit down to one per spur and about 6 to 8 inches apart.
Okay.
Seems kind of cruel at the time, but you're rewarded for it.
Yes.
Okay.
And just while we're on the subject, which has nothing to do possibly with this Northern California apple tree, but when we talk about bagging apples, I say, well, I've got, you know, thousands of apples up there. Well, just do 20 or 50.
Uh-huh.
That's all. I mean, if you... However many good fruit you want, that's how many you do. You don't have to do them all.
That's a good idea.
So, okay.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, we're ready to go to round two. Good morning.
Hi, I wanted to get some advice on pruning apple and plum trees, and I'll take my answer off the radio.
Very well.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I wish I knew how old those apples and plum trees were.
Yeah, good point.
We'll take the plum tree first. Plums, as you look at the tree, you'll see that they're very bushy. And so there's going to be a lot of what we call thinning cuts. In fact, I looked at a plum tree Saturday when we were doing a pruning class. I said, this is a tree of 1,000 cuts.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to go in and go back, take the stem, the little limb that you want to remove, and go back to where it joins the main stem. And there should be a little lump or collar there. So you cut just at that collar. In the same way with apples, if you follow the stem back, a little stem back to a larger stem, you'll see a swelling. That swelling is the collar, and that's where you cut. You don't cut the collar off. The collar has the hormones to heal the wound from the cut that you make. So on your plum tree, you're going to do a lot of thinning cuts, and thinning prevents branching. That tree branches naturally, and it's a hormone thing that we don't need to talk about. But the apple tree, it has a lot of that hormone, and it doesn't want to branch. And so you're going to remove anything that's growing toward the center. You're going to remove anything that's dead. And then those suckers or very vigorous stems that are going straight up, you'll want to remove the strong ones and leave some of the weak ones. The weak ones will produce a hormone that will help control new water sprouts from coming up the following season.
And percentage-wise, how many would you leave of the weaker ones?
I'd leave one about every 6 inches, maybe every 12 inches.
Okay.
But pick out the weak.
Mm-hmm.
And again, they're weak for a particular reason. And then they're not going to take all the energy away from the tree and the fruit that's going to come. And then they're going to help you control. And then if, as the season progresses and you go walk around your tree in the summertime, you see any of these sprouts that are coming up and you know you don't want them, pull them out then. In fact, you can actually pull them off and they'll pop out and they'll take away some of the sort of hidden water sprouts around the base of it that would come back if you just cut it off. If you pull it off, you'll pop out some tissue, some wood, and that will help control other water sprouts that may come. If you have large limbs, and again, you know, you want to thin things out. A friend of mine who's no longer with us, but anyway, he liked to prune trees as a hobby, and he said when he got through pruning a tree, he wanted to be able to throw a cat through it. So it wouldn't hit anything. And so that's what you sort of a goal you're looking at. And then you want to have in your mind, what is the general shape of the tree that you want after you get through pruning? And then try to maintain that shape. So you want a mental image of what your tree is going to look like.
And I don't know if we want to talk a little bit about summer versus winter pruning, but I pretty much all do summer pruning now.
Okay, if, in general, winter pruning stimulates growth and summer pruning inhibits growth. So if you've got a young tree, well, you want growth until the tree gets to the size that you want. So you will do more winter pruning on a young tree. Then when the tree reaches the size that you want, then you'll go to summer pruning, which will help maintain that size. And your summer pruning should be done by the first week in August. If you prune any later than that, then you're going to get new growth, and it will not have a time to harden off or winterize itself for when winter comes. And you could get dieback, because every once in a while it does get cold. In fact, it's predicted to get cold here in the next few days.
Okay. I'm speaking with Ted Swenson of the Home Orchard Society. We're here to answer your questions and to talk about the Home Orchard Society. 231-8187 if you have questions on fruit, trees, or grapes, edible bushes, and whatnot. Now, you said, let's talk about blueberries a little bit. You said that the arboretum has 30 bushes or so. What should we be doing in the blueberry, for blueberries now?
Okay, in blueberries, Oregon State, a couple of years ago, did a classic experiment, I thought, in that we usually do things because we read them in books and the so-called experts tell us what to do. So people plant their blueberries 4 feet apart because that's what the books say. Oregon State did an experiment and they started planting. They planted a group 1 foot apart and then another group 2 feet apart, another group 3 feet apart, another group 4 feet apart, and then did a comparison. And they found out that they got more yield when the blueberries are planted 1 foot apart. Then they, because, and this is geared toward commercial growers, but they developed what they call a speed pruning for blueberries. Now, blueberries reach mature yield at about 10 years. So you won't do a whole lot of pruning, maybe a little bit of thinning on top of the plant, but just one or two cuts, take out any disease and so forth. But after the plant gets about 6 years old, what you do is you go in every year and remove the oldest stem, and you cut it off an inch or two above the soil line, the oldest one. That's one cut. That's a speed pruning. Then it will send up branches, and so that will be replacement. And so you will go in every year and take out one, the largest stem, and then maybe do a little bit of touch-up around the top.
Well,
but that's it.
Would you ever take out two stems?
Essentially, no.
Oh.
Not unless it really, really, really got crowded in there.
Okay. We tend to make things a lot harder than nature does, really. Okay.
Yeah, if there's an easy way, that's the way
that's the way I do it.
I'm basically lazy.
Yeah. Well, I had another friend and former guest, Mace Vaughn of the Xerxes Society, talked to him last night. He wanted some recommendations on persimmon and cherries and what to plant in his normal Portland lot. And he asked, are persimmons... Well, I thought that persimmons were self-fruitful. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
They are here. The ones that are selected to grow here are self-fruitful. If you get down, in Southern California and so forth, where the pollinators are, then they aren't. I have a persimmon in my front yard. The only thing I recommend about persimmons is to get the non-astringent persimmon. I bought what I thought was a non-astringent persimmon, and it is astringent, which means you wonder where your saliva went for about a week. You can keep them at about 10 feet tall real easy. And I love persimmons because if a limb dies, you can just go up and hit it with your finger and it'll fall off.
Oh.
No cuts. I love it.
Do they take grafts?
Yes, they're usually grafted. We will probably have some persimmon at the Scion Exchange.
Okay.
Another thing about persimmons is it will take about 7 or 8 years before you get fruit.
Ah.
So don't write letters to whomever you get the tree from. But 4 years from now, you wonder why it didn't fruit.
Well, one of the suggestions that I had for these, since he wanted fruit right away, is that to look to a nursery where they might have 3 or 4 year old fruit available or trees available for those things.
Right, to get started.
Right, paying an extra $20 is probably a pretty good investment for 3 or 4 years. The other question he had, and maybe some of the listeners would too, is about cherry trees and the pollination requirements for those.
Okay, cherries are a whole nother story. There are a lot of self-fruitful cherries out there now. Up at Summerland in British Columbia, they have done extensive breeding for cherries, and they have a lot of self-pollinating cherries where you don't need a pollinator. And surprisingly, some of them are very good.
It's one thing you give up sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes you give up something. One thing to talk about cherries is that there's really no dwarf rootstock for cherries. they should put on the label called dwarfing, which means smaller than standard. And a standard size cherry tree is something like 45 feet. So that means you may get a cherry tree, if it says dwarfing on it, you know, may it just grow to 40 feet, which is not any comfort.
No.
But there are several rootstock out there that are quite dwarfing. And one that we will have at the Scion Exchange in Canby on March 4th is called Crymix, CRYMSK5. It's new out of Russia. It's supposed to be 10 foot plus. Yeah, now how much plus?
Yeah.
My guess would be 5 to 15 feet. It hasn't been grown extensively in the United States, so we really don't know. But it's used for both sweet and sour cherries. The other that you can buy on the market is Gisela, and that's Gisela 5. And it will give you a cherry tree between 10 and 15 feet. We have, and I don't have them right off the top of my head, but we have a list of an extensive list of all of the self-pollinating cherries. And at one time, I have a chart somewhere in my computer of when they get ripe compared to Bing, and whether they require pollinators or not. But cherry pollination doesn't mean there's some different chromosome phenomena going on with cherry pollination. It makes it difficult. So there are groups of cherries that will pollinate each other, and there are other groups that will not. Just let me emphasize the three favorite cherries here in the Northwest: Bing, Lambert, and Royal Anne, or Napoleon to the rest of the world. Royal Anne here in the Northwest will not pollinate each other.
There's always something.
There's always something. You need a Sam or a Van. I have, in my front yard, I have 5 cherry trees. And one of them is Stella, which is self-pollinating. And the other is Schema, S-K-E-N-E-E-M-A, I think. And it's a lot like Royal Anne. Excuse me, a lot like Bing.
Oh.
It's a big, dark cherry. And it gets ripe late, so it resists cracking. So if I was looking for a cherry, I'd be looking for a self-pollinator. And I would be looking for one that is quite late in the season to avoid our spring rains.
And this information might be available someplace on your computer, but not on the Home Orchard Society's website, I presume.
Speaking of the Home Orchard website, you might go there. There's a lot of stuff.
Yeah, homeorchardsociety.org.
We are going to be putting extensive amount of material on that website within the next month.
Okay.
And we'll make that available.
Great. Well, Ted, I told you that he knows just about everything there is to know, or he's a very persuasive liar. Hey, there might be an opportunity for you in the... Oh, never mind.
Yeah, it's going to be an election year.
Yeah, thanks, Ted. Ted Swenson of the Home Orchard Society. Go to the website and get all sorts of information. I'll be back in a month. Thanks, Tammy. Be well.
This program is made possible in part by KBU Foundation members and a grant from Oregon Peaceworks, presenting the second annual Gala Mardi Gras benefit, Saturday, February 25th, 6 p.m. at the Grand Ballroom in downtown Salem, featuring music by Kate Sullivan and Company, Voodoo Mountain Zydeco, and Zydeco Dance Lesson by Deborah Seek, plus the political satire of Dr. Atomic's Medicine Show, with New Orleans-style food included, auction with unusual items, and no host bar. Tickets at 503-585-2767 or OregonPeaceWorks.org.
You're tuned to KBOO Portland. It's 11:01, and it's time now for Democracy Now! Today, a whole hour with Alice Walker.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Radio Cab, serving the metro area since 1946 with service 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Radio Cab offers airport service, wheelchair accessible vans, and can be reached at 503-227-1212 or on the web at radiocab.net.
From Pacifica, this is Democracy.